Do you feel as though being a woman doing what you do is a benefit?
I absolutely do. And I think nowadays, even more so.
I'll have what she's having.
Welcome to another edition of
Digital Confidence Podcast.
Stories by women for women. This is the She Talks Confidence Podcast. This is Tony Dufresne, PhD. Welcome back. And of course, this week, I have not disappointed you in terms of having an amazing guest, Satandra Hoover. Satandra, how are you?
I am doing great. Thanks, Tony.
I'm so excited. We had a long talk before the show, mostly having to do with Boston, how much, because she's from Western Mass, and I just love that town, and how other people should stay in their lane when they talk about fresh seafood, because you can't get it any better anywhere else. But Satandra is on because she is a incredibly successful, and you would call yourself a social impact and inclusive insurance consultant. And your resume, your CV is lengthy, and you've done so many things. But first and foremost, and really it was for my own edification, when we came on, I said, hey, listen, if my 10-year-old daughter was here and she said, hey, what does she do? How would you explain it to her in terms of what you do now?
I help businesses be as efficient as possible so that they can deliver as much good in the world as they can.
Love it. And so that's really the elevator pitch, because it's really, when it comes down to it, I could read the long list of things that you do. And really, I love the fact that you are out there making a difference. You're out there creating value by almost creating a brand new niche in insurance to help with, and you use three things inclusively, right? Including profits, right? What are those three things?
Yeah, absolutely. So I like to say that I work at the nexus of impact, inclusion, and profit. So that's how to deliver as much impact as possible, right? How to include people in the process, and then also deliver company value.
And that's totally possible, right?
Absolutely.
So let's take a step back, your origin story in terms of your dad and how you embraced the passion in the global climate change environmental thing through that.
My father is a tropical botanist. So ever since I was about 4 months old, I started traveling the globe and traveled 50 some odd countries. And so with the work with my dad, it really was from that very young age of infancy all the way through, you know, middle school, high school, obviously leading into college, of having this exposure of working in very rural areas. And so being a tropical botanist meant going into villages out in the middle of nowhere, communities with very limited supplies and infrastructure. And so from infancy, the area of anthropology and understanding people and engaging with people of different backgrounds and mindsets and understanding has always appealed to me. And so that really served as the foundation of what I have done for the rest of my life. And whether that led into becoming a foster parent or working in agricultural development or working with women's organizations. And then the first decade of my career, I spent working for the U.S. State Department, USAID, and the UN and the Red Cross. And I did disaster response and conflict management, human migration. And so lived, traveled all over the world, really creating that foundation of working with people and communities, often at their worst times. So following natural disasters or during wars and active conflicts or shortly thereafter. And it's just always been something that has appealed to me, of trying to figure out the way to reduce suffering and create that nominal increase so that people can live even just a little bit better.
Like the perfect or the most incredible learning experience is the one where you get to just get out, travel, right? Mark Twain said, travel is the best, you know, learning experience you can do. How did you start to create you in those stages? And then did you start to come up against any barriers or obstacles as a young woman in this field?
Yeah, absolutely. So in addition to having a father as a tropical botanist and traveling with him, I also grew up on a farm in Western Massachusetts. And so what that to me, all of that meant was that I really did have a childhood that was very unusual. The house I grew up in was an 1830s farmhouse with no indoor heating other than a wood stove. And so to your question on the fire, I think that was that's just who I am. I'm a very out extrovert. I can be very intense. I am very passionate. I'm a very much of a go-getter, and that's just me by nature and who I am. I think that I was able to identify where those areas were because of my family. So both of my parents who encouraged me to explore, to try. When I was in middle school and high school, I wanted to go off on the expeditions with my dad and travel internationally by myself. And my parents allowed me to do it.
Did they really? Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I think their side of the story might be different from mine.
That wouldn't be surprising.
But I also grew up like in a much broader family with aunts and uncles and other family members who had done Peace Corps and other international experiences and had international development careers. And so I think that was just the essence of our family. That's just what we encouraged and supported. And for me, it wasn't anything out of the norm. And so it really created that foundation and having that support from my parents and aunts and uncles and cousins that really encouraged it, supported it, were enthusiastic about it and interested in it. And I think for others that may not come from that environment, it definitely is much more difficult to identify and to find that support system. And I would definitely say, and I've talked to so many people, as you and I had talked about, I live out here in the Midwest now, outside of Chicago, and I've spoken to numerous high school students who are interested in this space of international development and international careers. And it's a very different conversation if that's not a world that you come from. And so I always encourage people to find the network and support system and people that have had careers in this space to help be mentors and guides, to ask questions and get ideas. And so if it is something that you have this passion and calling and interest for, to talk to people and find out what the options are and what those paths can be. And there's certainly lots of women that are in this space that are passionate about being mentors and supporting other women into the field.
I was going to ask you, as a woman and a young woman, now you want to be traveling. And of course, if you ask your parents, it'd be a different story. Clearly, that you just said, I'm going to Botswana. See you later. Where did you get the confidence to do that? Because that runs up against the whole adage of safety as a woman traveling. And then you would get out to third world countries, which adds another layer on that. How did you just not think about it when you just made the decision on that? And did you run into anything like that?
So I have lots of stories I could share. I think for me personally, I have an extremely high risk tolerance. And for me, while that was something I always thought about, it never was a detriment to me. It was actually something and still to these days, actively seek out. It's slightly different nowadays because I'm the single mother of a 9-year-old and priorities are different, but I would never flinch at going into an active war zone or going into an underdeveloped, developing country with diseases and conflict and natural disasters. And that's actually where a lot of it started. One of my earlier international trips was actually with my mom to Honduras right after Hurricane Mitch hit in 1998. Mm-hmm. And we were volunteering with a medical organization to provide medical support and attention to victims of the hurricane. And what I saw and experienced and the role that I played at that time, and I spoke Spanish, and so did translating and working with the patients. That was really the foundation, the work with my dad, that work with my mom, and having my parents be supportive and encouraging of that. It was never anything I really thought about. And I've definitely been in some very risky situations. I worked in Libya. I lived in Yemen during the middle of Arab Spring. You know, I've been in lots of war zones.
It's almost like ignorance is bliss, right? You take it as you don't even think about that stuff because you're so focused on what you wanted to do or wanted to learn or help? Is help a big thing for you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, ever since I have a memory, my passion has been in wanting to help others. Mm-hmm. It's the fire that burns inside of me. It's the passion. It's truly what I feel is my purpose here on the planet. And it manifests itself in so many different ways. But for me, that passion to help combined with a very high risk tolerance and not being deterred and detracted and fearful was that combination that allows me to do what I have done. And for other women and high school students, college students who are interested, I really encourage you to just listen to whatever that fire is that's burning inside of you, uninfluenced or unencumbered by those that are around you, and to just allow that freedom of thought and that freedom of passion to really express itself and to research and find where those opportunities do exist. Because that's where you really can make the greatest impact. And if you're passionate about something, that's where you will then be able to also contribute the most.
There's a lot of opportunities out there, more so than you even think, or even creating your own opportunity, almost like you in your insurance niche. You're almost like creating that opportunity.
Yeah.
With the passion as the fire, and with this almost unspeakable confidence, I think because of your experiences and the fact that you brought up a really great point, the fact that you're focusing on helping, you're focusing on other people's needs, takes you out of the ego, takes you out of the fear of jumping in to something new, and allows you to perform, allows you to be there and be present for these people and whatever you are there to help them with. As a woman, is it different doing something like that? And what have you found in that, in doing something like this?
The short answer is absolutely yes. It is definitely different. I'm 5'1", right? I'm also not a tall woman. And so being a shorter woman who looks very young, trying to go into disaster zones, and that first decade of my career was working with militaries and governments around the world and trying to figure out how to find that balance between a certain level of authority and decision-making, because that's what my job was. But at the same time, being engaging, being culturally sensitive, being aware, it was very much of a constant balancing act and how to project and to demonstrate my confidence in different ways. And I don't think that there is a single solution or answer for it, but it definitely is a challenge. And being a woman and in those spaces is not easy. I think we've come a long way. And nowadays, exactly to your comment, to your point earlier, I believe that we really, truly live in very much of an interdimensional world, much more so than in the past. That I really look at the world from all these perspectives, that there isn't just one way to do things, and bringing in different perspectives and experiences, that's what makes the world better. And being able to have those conversations and bringing in different careers and backgrounds, right? That's what really can move the needle nowadays. And so I don't think that there is the one size fits all, but it's about really pursuing the passion, pursuing the interest, knowing what you care about, and then feeling free and open to try. And I think not having fear of failure is really important. And you mentioned the word ego, and I could certainly talk about that for a long time. But being able to put your own ego aside and not being afraid to try something and fail at it, or try at something and then realize you need to do it a little differently and learn, to me is really important. And I think in the development space and in the, you know, social impact and international work, it's very easy to, while there is a lot of help and good that you're doing, a lot of it also times is driven by ego, and trying to understand what your motivation is to do the work and behind the work and how you do the work, to me is also really important, right? If it's very much of this, I live in a more developed country with great infrastructure and wonderful roads, and we have safety and, you know, well-built buildings, and we have rule of law and security, and now I want to go and I want to work in a foreign country that doesn't have all of that because I want that in the country, that is a really bad motivator. And so to me, and it has taken me a while to even come to this place of realization, that it much more is about incremental change and improvements and listening to local communities and really understanding what the needs are rather than imposing upon them the realities in which we live. And to me, that's really important, is that motivation. And when we say we want to do good, why is it that we want to do good? And doing it not for ourselves, but rather how we can contribute.
Do you feel as, so basically don't go into countries and create some sort of imperialistic umbrella over them and force them to do the things that we do. So basically, yeah.
And there are so many stories about that, right?
That's history. Yeah, and
there's the fantastic saying, excuse my language, but the road to hell is paved by good intentions.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Do you feel as though being a woman doing what you do is a benefit?
I absolutely do. And I think nowadays, even more so, because there's this realization through sectors such as microfinance that really have identified the need and the importance of, and the opportunity and benefit that can come by working with women and women's groups in rural countries, rural communities, et cetera, that being a woman and being able to go and have conversations with women's groups and women's leaders, you're able to achieve much more, I would say, than if you were a man. And obviously, that's also very region specific, right? If you're in the Middle East, where I worked for many years, men can't even enter the circles. And so being a woman and being able to go and have those conversations and honest dialogue and open dialogue is absolutely vitally important. And I think women would generally be able to get more honest insights to really understand what the needs are than a man would in those areas, and not to undervalue the contribution that men bring in the space too, because it's vitally important and you really can't have one or the other. But I absolutely agree.
And it's not about mutually exclusive or either or, it's about just understanding the unique tool set that you have as a woman that a lot of my clients come in and don't realize that they have this unique tool set, that you guys have things that men don't. And it can be a huge benefit in those situations. You've been to a lot of different communities, a lot of different countries, spoken with a lot of different women's groups or just women specifically. What are some of the lessons you've learned from other countries, from other cultures about being a woman, being a business owner?
There are several things. One, I have come up with a phrase that I now use of listen, learn, and leverage. And to me, that was really informed by my decades of working globally. And what to me that means, and again, I think I mentioned my background's in anthropology. And so I studied cultural anthropology. I was a field archaeologist for a while and field anthropologist. And so I think being able to understand where I come from, to understand the experiences that I have had, whether that's from childhood, whether that's from the schools that I was able to go to, the international experiences, et cetera. So being able to understand my own self and background, but then being able to go into communities and really be able to take all of that and put it into a little bucket on the side and have a very open mind of listening and a sense of curiosity. And I want to understand, not because I want to fix, but because I'm interested and I care about people's stories and I care about people's perspectives. And I have this real true passion and interest of figuring out how to bring people together. And I've lived in so many areas of war zone and conflict and understanding why conflict happens and conflict mitigation and negotiation. And to me, a lot of that comes down to this polarization and separation. So to me, so much of what I have learned through my experiences is really just that genuine sense of curiosity and desire to hear people's experiences, not because I want to place my own on them, but generally and genuinely, I want to know. And being able to be that bridge between culture and language and community to me is really fascinating. I find it so fulfilling.
So rewarding, so fulfilling. It's like Walt Whitman said, be curious, not judgmental.
Yeah.
That really is the key. I got to be honest with you, as a man, of course, we could be curious too. And I'm overgeneralizing, but that's part of my show. We tend to want to go in and just fix things based upon our particular perspective, because we feel as though we have the answers, or we can get the answers based upon the information that we receive, instead of going in and just listening and seeing, and then going to where they're at, and then finding solutions based upon where they're at and what their perspective is. That is a huge difference between men and women that I found in general. And that's why I think that your skill set is so powerful and so perfectly set up for what you do in terms of cross-cultural bridging and helping these communities, allowing yourself to, like you said, put yourself in a bucket more or less in your things, and just sitting there and just allowing yourself to be open and aware and having perspective to where you allow them to come to you and then share and then figure out where the common ground is or what you can do. As a mentor, because I'm assuming you do a lot of mentoring, either directly or indirectly because of where you're at now and what you've done. Let's say a mentoree comes to you, young woman, even a little girl comes up after you do a speaking thing. And they say, I would love to get into something like this, but I'm just not sure. Or you sense that they have a level of self-doubt or a crisis of confidence or something that's not getting them. What would be your advice to them?
I always say start small. And I think this goes across the board with social impact in general as well. But start small. Find something locally that you can do that's of interest to you. Maybe it's someone who really has a passion for science and wildlife and nature. Okay, go volunteer at an animal shelter or a nature preserve, like a park and Sierra Club, or at a food pantry. There's so many different places, but I think that's really important, is if you feel this initial, I think I want to do this, but I'm not sure, try something or join a group, join a club, whether it's through your school or another community association or a local foundation. And I definitely encourage, always, because I'm a total nerd myself, reading and listening to podcasts and learning and talking to people. And I think also I always encourage anyone, girls, boys, whomever, ask questions. I think a lot of times in childhood, our children are not encouraged to ask questions. And that, to me, question asking is also a form of critical thinking. And so asking questions is so important. And then they get into college and then they become professionals. And then we wonder why we don't have critical thinking. I always encourage people to ask those questions. Again, talk to people, do that research, read articles, read books, whatever it is, but really try to learn and to understand. The world is a fascinating place and there is so much out there. And I do. I love working with children and middle schoolers, helping people to really figure out and build that confidence and that curiosity.
Oh, what a mic drop. I just love that. Satendra Hoover, thank you so much. Of course, now we're going to do part two for 3 hours, talk about critical thinking, right?
I love it. Let's do it.
And honest to God, I would, because we talked a little bit about that before the show, and man, is that a topic to talk about. So we'll do that. We'll talk about that next time. So Satendra, thanks so much. Do you have some information that you'd like to share in regards to where somebody can get a hold of you? If they have a question, or if they want to know a little bit more about how to get connected in regards to the really amazing work that you're doing right now.
LinkedIn is the best place. I also have my website, but the best is through LinkedIn. You can find everything there.
Gotta love that. And that is, where is it? LinkedIn at Satendra Hoover.
Yep,
and Satendra Hoover. And I love, where'd you get the name? Where'd they come up with that name?
Yes. My father, being a tropical botanist, he found a flower in Thailand called the Sirtandra, and he loved it. It has these little white flowers, and came back from the trip and told my mother about it. And they decided to name their first daughter after it. So they took off the first R and created my name, Satendra, and I got to be the lucky first daughter.
Oh my God, I love that. I should have asked you that at the very beginning. That, I'm definitely keeping that in because that is super cool. So it's CYTANDRA Hoover. And I'll put that in the show notes as usual. And of course, you can get a hold of me at TonyDufresne.com. And if you can't spell that, because you talk about spelling, nobody can spell my last name. So you can go to theconfidencedoc.com and I have all my fun stuff there, the podcast links. I also have a new ebook, The Transform Your Life, True Confidence for Women, which is basically my keynote, summarized, really my whole program to summarize. You get that for $7 instead of getting a pumpkin spice latte and a cake pop. Save yourself some empty, terrible calories and go get the ebook. Is that a good enough pitch? Yeah.
I think so. I think you should get the pumpkin spice latte with your book.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, yeah. Why deny yourself the pleasure? Right? Exactly. Go get both. Do both. It's $14. You'll never spend a better $14. I'm telling you right now. Hope things are well, and I will see you next week.